Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fawcast. We are back after a week off. And by we, I mean we have definitely a different roster going on today. Ross and Jared join us again. No KK, as she is at a minimum 2 days away from giving birth. Could be today, could be tomorrow, but Saturday will be the last day. She will be pregnant. So.
Has she made a final decision on potentially eating the placenta?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I think she was leaning against
that. By the way,
update
on that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You did have an update, didn't you?
My wife's placenta is still in existence. It's in a freezer in Carlisle and could still someday be powdered and consumed. So
why in Carlisle, of all places?
Again, remember I mentioned that Aaron has a sister who's a little bit more holistic.
She kept it?
Coach, for odd.
That's what I've been told. She's amazing. She's an amazing lady. Jeremy's a lucky guy, but this is just one of those things. All of us are different in some way, right? We all have something about us that other people look at and go, oh, that's a bit weird. It just so happens that Amy's is she has her sister's placenta in a freezer. It's not that weird when you really say it several times.
I see nothing wrong.
No, that makes it more weird.
Anyway, so that's it. I went home that night and I was like, Aaron, we had a conversation about your placenta today. And she was kind of laughing about it. I'm like, yeah, we talked about eating it and how, you know, you'd considered or this idea was being kicked around the family. And Aaron's like, yeah, Amy still has it.
It depends on how hungry I am.
How hungry I am.
Jared's tweaking the
board. It doesn't matter how hungry I am.
Hey, Jared, as long as you can hear me talk.
Yeah, I can hear you.
It's fine. I can't hear myself talk, but I don't need to do that. So it's totally fine. Hey, I can almost.
There you go.
There you go.
Ooh, so much better. So a couple of quick housekeeping items as well. So Chris is missing for the second straight week. So we send out condolences to the Williams family.
Man, that's weird.
Yeah, hopefully I'm not tweaking all over the board here.
So. I think you are, though. You're going to be.
This podcast gear, man. This is an episode of the podcast itself.
There we go.
It's just these cords are.
Everything's
are just
goofy.
Super delicate.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, it sounds pretty good right there.
Don't cross
Ross,
up on anything.
Ross, you just want to hold that cord the whole show?
Oh, yeah, we'll do that. There we
so,
go.
So, Chris, as everyone knows because of Twitter, had an uncle die. And then Chris had another uncle die in the most extraordinary circumstances I've ever heard of. So we do wish Chris well, and he'll be back at some point.
You do want to tell people, like, the Uncle Dick died last Thursday, and then they were preparing for the funeral on Monday. The funeral was going to be at, like, 11 on Monday morning. Dick's oldest brother died preparing for the funeral.
Yeah.
So getting ready for his brother's funeral,
mm-hmm.
Chris's other uncle passes away.
Just drops dead. Wasn't even ill.
No, right? Yeah, right. Had a massive heart attack at his home in front of his family with all of his kids there. And then, unbelievable circumstances that his family had to go through to be preparing for a funeral, have an uncle die, and then be at an uncle's funeral literally hours after finding out that another uncle had passed away. It's surreal.
It's an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You've
seen it. Where the most improbable things happen, you're like, this isn't real.
Right.
That's why this is a TV show.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it felt like.
You've got a brother and a sister, and both older, right?
Yeah,
the youngest
both
in your family.
Older.
I'm the same way, man. And Mike is not the youngest in his family, but Mike is Chris's dad.
Yeah.
These were both older brothers for him, and his only two older brothers.
Yeah.
So in the span of 4 days, he
lost
loses both of his older brothers. Just a tough run.
Man. So yeah, love to Mike Williams, good guy. And Chris will be back, and certainly might have some thoughts on that, but wanted to carry on the podcast in Chris's name, as he would want us to do. Speaking of other household items, Nick is no longer here. And by here, I mean on the podcast and at Charterhouse Real Estate. Nick has left. And that happens in real estate. The common question is, was there an issue? Was there a problem? Are you mad at him? And the answer to all of that is no. No issue. Nick and I are friends.
Why is there a hole in the wall?
There is. Look up there. Look behind you.
Oh, his picture is off of the roster.
We have caricatures of the agents that work
here. That happens quick. You're dead fast around here, aren't you?
Holy cow. So we have caricatures of the agents. In fact, we're actually missing a couple. Their caricatures are being drawn. But on our wall, we have the agent roster, and Nick's is just plain cardboard at the moment. But Nick is
what they do, by the way, when you're at Disney and you do something profane.
They put you on the wall?
They put you on the wall, but they put cardboard over your picture.
Okay.
They've got a great system in Disney. So, one of my favorite memories of my brother that I'll ever have was when we were at Disney and we went on Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
And we get down. Have you ever been on Splash Mountain?
Yeah.
So, it's like the flume, I think it's called, right?
Yeah.
It has four seats, and it seats eight people. Each seat has two seats in it. My nephew and I were in the front seat. He's like 13 years old. My brother is in the second seat by himself. And behind my brother are a family of four, mom and son, dad and daughter in the back seat. So we splash down into the final hill. And, you go underneath the bridge and there's hundreds of people sitting there watching you taking pictures. We splash down into the final thing. And my nephew instantly turns around. He's like, Dad, you didn't do anything stupid during the picture, did you? My brother's like, what picture? What are you talking about? My nephew says, when you come down the final hill, they take your picture and then they put it up in a big screen down here at the bottom of the hill. And my brother's like, I didn't even know they were taking a picture. I wish you would have told me. I'd have done something dumb.
I think they'd have something on the ride that says, about to get your picture taken.
Brad knew they were going to take a picture.
Okay.
We get down to the picture area and the pictures pop up of our flume.
Yep.
And in the front seats, me and my nephew, we got our hands in the air. We're screaming. We're having a great time.
Yep.
Behind my brother are a family of four, all screaming, having a good time. Lovely picture. Except for the fact that in the second seat is a 44-year-old man with his T-shirt pulled over his head and an erotic-looking look on his face while he tweaks both nipples.
Did he buy it?
No. You couldn't. It popped up for a quarter of a second on the screen.
Nope, down.
And instantly this cardboard sheet flew down over the top of the...
Because don't they try to sell those for like $20 or something?
Oh, yeah. You can buy it. Yeah. They are not letting you carry around proof into the world that you had nudity or anything profane happen at Disney
That's
World.
Great.
But I will tell you, dude, I could not walk through the park. I had to stop every 20 feet because I was doubling over with laughter. It was the greatest picture
I've ever
seen.
Some doozies that the world of Disney has seen on that ride. But anyway, so I don't want to get off the track of real estate yet because a couple other things I want to mention. So Nick's gone. We wish Nick well. People move around in real estate, so I'll just leave it at that. We continue. That's Charterhouse. I do want to mention something, though, related to real estate today, other than Ryan Grove, which we can plug in a bit. And we don't talk a lot about real estate or numbers on this podcast, obviously. We like to keep it fun. But rates right now are ridiculously good. Okay, this is worth mentioning to our audience. I'll tell you why. This isn't about just buying a home. So rates right now are anywhere from I'm hearing some people say 3.375% down to 3.5%. Okay, they haven't been in the threes much at all in the last couple of years. To get down to now today, at least 3.5, maybe lower, where you can save some money if you're listening to this and you already own your house is a refinance. Okay, if you own your home, if you already own a mortgage, to do a refinance, and we have people here at our office that can help you with this, the good folks at Community Choice, it costs a little bit to do a refi, but it doesn't have to cost a lot or anything out of pocket because you can build it into what you're refinancing. Right. But you can talk about saving a lot of money over the course of the rest of this loan, monthly, et cetera. So if you own a home or have owned a home for a while and you have a mortgage that's even over a 4 and you can lower that down to 3.5, do it. You are going to save money over the long run. So, again, I don't know if we've ever really talked rates, but the rates haven't been this low in a long, long time. So, and obviously, if you're thinking about buying a house, too, we've talked a little bit about this, the difference in a rate. If you buy at 3.5 or 4.5, not a huge difference, but large enough where you're going to, basically at 3.5, you're going to be able to buy 10% more house. So on a $200,000 house, you're looking at the difference between a $180,000 house or a $200,000 house, and that can be a big difference as well. So not preaching at you guys, just trying to save you some money. If you have questions, you can always reach out to me, but rates are fantastic right now, so jump on that. Now that Nick is gone, by the way, we are looking for where we're going to go for a co-host. A lot of people have said it needs to be Ross Peterson, but Ross already has 10 jobs. So some people out there like KK.
Oh, KK, dude, that was gold last – was that last week? 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago that we were here?
Whenever,
he's fantastic.
Whenever it was, but this is interesting. So I got an email. So we are trying to – from time to time, we don't get rich off the podcast, but the podcast has good numbers, I think. Jared can confirm or deny this.
I don't see the numbers. I haven't even seen the numbers on my own podcast.
But so. Williams likes to keep those things secret. But in the past, it's always been – there's a lot of people that listen to our – not just the podcast, but all the Cycling Fanatic podcast. So there comes times when you try to capitalize that a little bit, and not just for yourself, but getting the word out about a company or about somebody to this audience that hopefully they embrace and use. So I was pitching a company that I'm not going to name here about, hey, it makes a lot of sense, man. We've been working on this thing for 4 years now. We've got 225 episodes. We've got a loyal following. It makes a lot of sense for us to link your brand to what we're doing. So the response back was, we'll go ahead and give it a listen. You know, we'll see what happens.
No, don't do that.
You know, we want to know we're sponsoring. I go, hey, you know, hey, by all means, go pluck an episode out of the internet. They're all on there somewhere, etc. So there's 225 episodes they could have picked, and here's the response that I got back from them. All right, so
prospective buyer.
Hey, Mark. Several of us gave it a listen. Gotta be honest, the episode we turned to was about scrotox, hashtag wrinkle-free scrotum, gay sex, premarital sex with your wife, etc. We all agreed that's not really for us as a brand. So of all the episodes they could have picked, I think they probably picked the worst one, maybe, that we've ever done. So, I'm like, I said, hey, you might want to try a few other episodes to see what we're, you know, we talk about sports and
that's
stuff.
That's amazing.
So their impression of the podcast is boiled down to scrotox at this point. So I don't think they're going to be joining us. But, hey, it reminds me, if anyone out there who's actually a fan of the podcast and owns a business, we're happy to plug what you do. Just know what we're all about here. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, that didn't go well. I should have directed him towards the Matt Campbell interview, probably more so than anything
else.
Yeah,
dude, send a link.
You know,
don't say, hey, pick one out of the. Just go ahead and pluck one, guys. No, send them your best work.
Yeah.
And say, hey, look, this is the type of highbrow stuff we do. And by the way, don't subscribe.
Yeah.
I mean, even then, they could have pulled up the last one that we did where I'm talking about heckling at the Miracle League.
Eating boogers.
Placentas. And
yeah, I mean, like the last couple, if we're honest, have been a little bit more on the blue
side. Well, then step your game up here, Charter. What are we doing today? So I assume today, then, you're coming with some really good stuff. You've prepared some topic that you want Jared and I to dissect. We're going to talk about Malcolm Gladwell or...
Of course.
I actually listened to Malcolm Gladwell last night.
Did you listen to the new season four version?
Here's what I wanted to
did
do.
It this my, morning. Fantastic.
My plan for the podcast, especially when you guys are on, is just to kind of let you go. But we do have... If we want to talk sports, we can dissect it. We've got an NBA draft. Obviously, that's relevant to what we're doing time-wise. But yeah, it's always the topics of the day. The reason people like Ross on the show is because it's you never know what you're going to get.
I'm down with that.
You are the life is like a box of chocolates guy. That's what you are.
I appreciate that. I'll take that as a compliment.
And we did talk about, before we started today, we were talking about a subject. You just mentioned Malcolm Gladwell and his podcast, which you give rave reviews about. You say it's your favorite, right?
Yeah, my favorite. And I hate using things like by far or it's not even close, because it's those things are designed to shut down the conversation and not actually talk about what is close and perspective and all that. But
such a Ross thing to say.
That is this is when I woke up this morning and saw that there was a new revisionist history. Like, it's that Christmas morning feeling for me. I mean it. I was giddy as soon as I saw that thing pop up. It was playing before I got into the shower. And I roll out of bed into the shower.
If Williams was here, he would have described it as eggplant emoji.
Yeah, right. That's Chris's way of saying it.
For sure.
I just... I think he's a really smart guy. I love he, almost every one of his podcasts makes me think for a while about something.
Wait, Chris or Malcolm Gladwell?
Malcolm Gladwell. Okay. And in fact, I was thinking about Chris on this Malcolm Gladwell podcast today. Jared, you said you've listened to it also. Yeah. It's a real deep dive into how we take tests in America and how lawyers are basically placed and picked in our in the current system and how it rewards speed over getting the right answer. Now, you've got to be able to do both.
And talking about timed tests.
Timed tests is what this thing is about, but it's deeper. Like, again, with all Gladwell things, it's deeper than that.
Have you read any of his books?
No.
No, you're not.
I'm not a huge. Yeah, I much prefer audiobooks.
I
like reading Chuck Klosterman. That's a dude I can read for days on end.
You got to remember where he graduated from.
I'm an East kid.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's really hard to read books when you're stealing hubcaps, Jared.
Yeah.
Okay, so the audiobooks just it keeps both hands free for all the fencing.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, Chris is a tortoise. Chris is a guy that can have an idea, work on that idea, and every time he addresses it, he's able to refine it and improve it. He can edit himself and make it better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hair. I'm out of the box. It's the best thing that I'm going to get. And every time that I try to turn around and reevaluate what I've done or edit what I've done, I ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
I water it down in some way. And that's why Chris and I think you make a really good team because we're so opposite and we come at things so completely differently. It might benefit me a little bit more when we're on the air because I am quick. I'm really fast on my feet. But Chris is smart. And those are two different things. Smart takes time. Smart takes a lot more thinking and planning, and then at the end of it, you get this really comprehensive idea that comes together. I'm the guy, I kind of form it as I go, and then when I get done, I go, oh, cool, we built that really neat ball, and there's an idea that we had there.
Mm-hmm.
But if I think about it too long, I'm gonna piss all over it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is about, in a way. And again, I know I'm taking some real liberties with what Malcolm Gladwell's doing here, but I'm anticipating where he's going to go over the course of this season. And I'm seeing it play out in my own life that there's benefits to both. And you can probably train your brain to do the other thing, but I think a lot of us are just built one way or the other. Gladwell did this in an earlier season, too, about talking about artists. And he talked about conceptual greatness and basically planned greatness. That some artists, they put their brush to the canvas, and when that brush comes off the canvas, they've got a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And they're never going to edit it, and they turn mistakes into purposeful parts of the painting.
Yeah.
And then there are artists that when one line gets out of place or one tone of paint is not what they anticipated, that's garbage, and they will start over and do it again.
Yeah.
That's Chris. Chris is the guy that he wants it to be perfect. He's got a plan in his head. He wants it all to go, and he's going to take the tortoise approach to it. I'm the dude that wants to slap the paint on there and then go, yeah, wasn't that cool?
It's a little bit, you guys are a mix of Bob Ross. I think Bob Ross is one of those guys. You ever watch the shows?
100%. Absolutely.
Bob Ross would start with like an idea and put it on the canvas and finish. I'm using air quotes that no one can see. And everyone would be looking at it and be like, oh, dude, that's perfect. I can't believe he did that. But then he goes back. And he does more.
Mm-hmm.
He adds more trees. He adds more to the sky.
He changes it, right?
You're like, dude, I loved it the way it was.
Yeah.
And some people wish he would stop, and some people wish he would do more. Jared, did you test well in college?
No, definitely not in college, but I don't know if that's because I was bad at testing or because I didn't study.
So here's the question. Okay, so studying obviously matters, but one of the things that Gladwell is talking about, and I haven't listened to this, but my argument would be that at a certain point, time doesn't matter. Now, why do we have time test? We have time test because you have a defined section of time to have the class, right? You have a 50-minute class, and then everyone has to leave and go off to something else. Or you have proctors giving an exam, right? You don't want to have to pay the proctors for 10 hours while these people are doing it. So there's reasons that we have time tests that make a lot of sense. But my point is, in college, Jared, if you had 50 minutes to do a test and got through it okay and answered all the questions in those 50 minutes, would you have done a lot better if given 4 hours?
Oh, no.
And my argument is not really.
No.
You either know it or you don't know it, and the time is not going to make the difference. Time only matters when you are literally, with 1 minute left, have 10 questions
right.
unanswered.
Yeah, but that's,
well, I'm kind of like Ross in the sense, I mean, even with the stuff that I do for my job, like I don't like to have to do stuff again, so I'll usually do it once. And, I mean, so most things that I do, like I wrote a feature story last week. I hadn't written a feature story in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down on one day and I wrote like 2,300 words just in one sitting. It probably took me like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And then I was done and I felt really good about it. And then Chris read through it. Rob read through it. They made a couple changes. And I was like, but I was like, I'm not doing it again. Mm-hmm. I feel like I did the best that I possibly could. I'll let you guys take a crack at it. And if you see some things that you think you can make better, then that's perfectly fine with me. But I was like, but I don't think that I can look at it and sit here and reread these sentences so many times. I'll drive myself nuts.
That's funny. Mark, that's almost a conversation you and I were having before we got recording here about everybody has different specialties. Everybody has something that they are good at or that
sure.
really interests them.
Sure.
And when you look at like a surgery that's happening inside that room, you can that is the epitome of that.
Everyone's doing their part.
The surgeon has a very specific job. Now, does the surgeon know how to do most of the jobs in the room? Yeah. But why is he not doing all them? Because it's better for him to be focused on that one thing that he's really good at or the one skill that he has that nobody else in the room has.
Yeah.
So now you've got to have a surgical tech there, an assistant, who knows every one of the 5,000 instruments that are on the table in front of them and knows when the doctor wants something, how to get it. The anesthesiologist, who, if they carry a decimal point the wrong way or do an equation wrong, can kill the person.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very specific job. Can everybody in the room figure out the math?
No.
Yeah. Well,
no. No.
Maybe. Can more than one guy figure out the math? Yeah. That guy knows. That's his specialty.
Yeah.
I do disagree with one of the things you said, though, man, about the... You said if you either know it or you don't know it, and it's either there or it's not. And I completely disagree with that. And I had an example of this with helping my wife with something this week. And it was an old math problem. It was finding, solving for X on linear angles or something like that. And that's something I knew how to do at one point in my life. I looked at this stuff, and it was Greek all of a sudden. I saw the problem, Mark, at about 9:30, and I thought, I'll never remember how to do this. I Googled a few things to try to get a handle on it, and after about 15 minutes, I literally looked at my wife and said, I do not know how to do this stuff. Dude, it was 11:30, 2 hours later, and something clicked in my brain. Something in there, that file cabinet got pulled, and the right piece of paper came flying onto the desk, and it went, wait a minute. I remember how to do all of that stuff. I didn't need a calculator. I took the iPad back from her, and I'm like, Rain Man all of a sudden, man, I'm seeing these problems. And as soon as they're popping up on the screen, I'm like, I know that. I don't even need to go through the...
I think what you're talking about, though, is recollection, okay?
But you
knew it. You did
again,
know.
But
you
it was
did
the,
know.
It was
you couldn't
the
bring
time,
it up.
But it was the time that allowed me to prove that I knew it.
Correct.
If that had been a timed test and it was like, all right, I know in the back of my head, I've got 30 seconds or 45 seconds to think about this, and if I don't know it, I have to move on and declare that I don't know this stuff. Well, that wasn't the case. And I think that part of this, and again, I'm assuming where Gladwell is going to go in his season, is that the real world doesn't a lot of industries, that's not the way the real world works.
Yeah.
In the radio industry, man, we joke about this all the time. I work on a glacier. It's really stable. I know I'm going to have a job, but at the same time, I can't change stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to get changes to happen in an industry that's existed for 1,000 years, right?
Yeah.
I think that part of where he's going to go with this in his conversation is that society, the law profession, is not about getting it right fast. Trials are slow. The system moves slow. And the idea is to get it right. If it takes you 2 hours to go, recall it and go, oh, man, I know the solution to this problem. I know which chess move I'm supposed to make to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it in the bullet format. I only know it now in classical format because I got time to think about it. That's the way the world really works. And so I think his premise is we need to reevaluate the way that we test people because we're losing good ones in that first filter.
Which I can completely agree with. But then the question is, how? How do you do it?
Yeah,
you know, instead of 4 hours for the SATs, now you've got 12.
Yeah.
You know, but you got to pay people for that, and there's an economic part.
100%.
To that.
Did you the Proctor thing that you mentioned? I think you've also done the gangster capitalism. Deep dive. Andrew Jenks, who does some amazing podcasts. He's got What Really Happened. He worked for Sports Illustrated for a long time. He has a podcast series called Gangster Capitalism. It is a deep dive into the college admissions scandal.
Yep.
Proctors play a big part in that.
Yeah.
Because they had to fake the ACT tests for these kids.
Mm.
And proctors are the people that are there to prove that or certify that the kid actually did the test in the time
yep.
provided. There's so many wrinkles to that college admission scandal that are disgusting, but the Proctors was one of them.
That would have to be like a deep, 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 deep thing too. Because I mean, I remember taking the ACT and it was like, there was no way that anyone could go and take that for you. I mean, you really had to have like created a really serious.
No, Jared, it's very simple. You have a crooked proctor.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got
it. Like, that is really all that you need.
You got to get people on the inside, like they're working for you. You know, because it's just. I mean, unless you're paying that proctor, there's no way you're getting past that person. Those people.
Yes, but how much does a proctor make? I mean, I look at this like Ross. Their proctor's making a maximum $15 an hour. Okay, and I go to that proctor and I say, "Here's $5,000."
Or 15? Or 50?
You just need to look the other way,
dude. For 50 grand, I'll take a lot
of people. As we proved with the last episode on what people will do for money, a lot of people are going to say, who am I hurting by taking this money?
How embarrassing would it be if you paid $50,000 to get the ACT done and then you still didn't get a good enough score?
Well, you'd get your 50 grand back, I can tell you that. I mean, you'll understand when listening to this podcast, that isn't even an option, Jared. This is a guarantee. It's not. This wasn't a gamble that these people were taking. This was an item they were buying off of a menu. Do you want a 32? Do you want a 34? Or do you want a 36?
Was this just the score that was being manipulated, or was there an actual test being taken?
Well, they're in several
because
cases.
Because there are people that are smart enough to get a 32 every time they take the test.
Again, I would encourage people to go listen to that one, too. The gangster capitalism is fantastic. Here's what you'll find out. There was discretion here. What are you comfortable with, Mark? Does Seton need to feel like he took the test? Does Seton need to feel like he got a 34? Because here's what we can do. We can put him in a room with the test and a proctor, and he can take the test.
And think he got his own 34.
And in the room next door, we're going to have a smarter kid really filling out a test that has Seton's name on it.
Yeah.
And that's the one that'll be handed in.
Yeah.
And then we'll say to Seton, hey, congratulations, buddy.
Yeah.
You got a 34 when, in fact, he got a 22.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That we can do it that way. Does your son, does he give a crap? Maybe Seton is, maybe you've talked to him about this and said, dude, we're buying your way in. You don't even need to do the test. Let him go play frisbee golf.
Yeah.
There's a story in the podcast of a kid who is literally playing with his friends outside of the room that his other classmates are taking a proctored ACT test.
Man.
And he says, I kind of felt bad, but at the same time, it was a beautiful day.
Like, I'm always torn. I'm torn on these topics because at the end of the day, it's a test. It's a role. You go into a college, and then what you make of your life from there becomes what it makes. You know, obviously, you don't want to advise that people cheat and do these things, but it's not as bad of a crime as many other things are.
But there's just so much about. See, I agree with what you're saying there, Mark. But it's when you get into the really nuts and bolts of this thing that you realize how gross it is. And there's one injustice that they touch on that I think highlights it a lot. There was a lady who, I think it was in the Philadelphia area. She lived in a neighborhood where the public schools were not great, and she was adjacent to one of the better performing public school areas in which her father lived.
Yeah.
So she cheated.
Mm-hmm.
She used her dad's address to get her kids into a better public school.
Okay.
They found out about it. She's in jail.
What?
She's in jail.
That seems a little far-fetched.
And she was fined $10,000.
How's that any different than someone just open enrolling somewhere?
How is that punishable by jail?
She didn't use the open enrollment. She cheated. And she did what she thought. She knew what she was doing was wrong. She knew she couldn't just use her dad's address. But she also knew this was a guaranteed way to help my kids get a better education.
Yeah.
So she does that. All right. Now you find out what some of the punishments are for taking $50,000, $500,000, millions of dollars to manipulate the university system at Yale.
Yeah.
I mean, these crimes don't even compare to one another, if they're even considered crimes, and the punishments are absolutely adverse from one another. Because you're wealthy, the system is different for you.
It sounds like, though, that the couple of famous actresses in this case, it does sound like they're at least facing time in prison. I don't know.
That's because they're stupid and they won't admit that they did anything.
Yeah. If the one of them, if they would have taken the plea agreement, it would have been a whole different
thing. Lori Loughlin, if she'd just taken the plea agreement, it would have been way different.
People are stubborn.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of time tests, I'm going to give you one right now.
Let's do it.
Ready? Get your pen out. Okay.
Okay, I got a pen.
Lots of pens in front of you. Jared already knows the answer.
I'm not
going to
write on this because that's a copy of a check.
Jared, I just flip over one of those on
that's
the back.
Okay. All right, okay.
So Jared and I did a trivia thing on Saturday. Could have finished second. We didn't. We blew it. Life goes on. But here's your question, okay?
Okay.
Rank these things in order from the lowest number to the highest number, okay? All right, so you've got record number of walks for Barry Bonds in a season. Someone's phone's going off.
That's me. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah.
Yep. Highest number of strikeouts in a year by Mark Reynolds.
Ooh.
Number of RBIs in a season by Hack Wilson.
Okay.
And number of hits in a season by Ichiro. Your time starts now. We need the lowest to highest.
Lowest to highest. We'll
see how well he does here.
Dude, I'm still pissed about that Kendrick Lamar question.
What was the answer to that song?
It was Bad Blood by Taylor Swift. I went back and listened to that song.
Don't mind
us,
Ross.
All right, I'm going to go lowest to highest. I'm going to go Wilson, Bonds, Reynolds, Ichiro.
He's wrong. He mixed up. You're correct on the first one.
Hack Wilson was the lowest. 190.
And what was your highest one?
Okay, then I had Ichiro. Barry Bonds with the walks. I had around 220.
You'll have to help me. I think he's mixed up two and three.
I think you flipped Reynolds.
Reynolds and Bonds. I had Reynolds K's at 240.
I want to say Bonds walked like 200 and I mean, it was like 250 or something.
Those are the two. But I was close. Yeah. I'm pretty close there though,
yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah. And then Ichiro's a high.
Ichiro was, because I think he had 300 hits.
260.
260, yeah.
260, okay.
260
okay.
hits. So that was one of the trivia questions
and
we had.
And then did Jimmy Rollins... Jimmy Rollins didn't beat that for hit. No, he had most. Did he get most at bats? He ended up with one season with like.
As far as I know, Suzuki still has the record.
Yeah, okay. Ichiro still has that record
for that.
All right, I feel like I did well there, but you're right. The time changes it.
See, you're a baseball fan, and we were debating this the other day, and it was something like Hack Wilson comes up.
Yeah.
You know, you're a baseball fan if you know like 190.
Yep.
Okay, it was in the 30s, 1930s, I think, when this happened.
Might even been before that.
Just a random number. But trivia is a great example of what we're talking about. It's a speed test. That's what it is. And that is an example where if given more time, you might be able to get the right answer.
Yeah, right. I think if I would have thought about it, maybe I would have realized Bonds had more walks than that. I was just kind of ballparking those as you were saying them to me because I wanted to do it quick. That's a fun one.
The other one I'm going to give our audience here that they can work on and think about was the one that was enjoyable. Jared, if you have a good one, feel free to throw it in just so people can debate each other in their cars as they listen. But the question was, what is the only U.S. state that is triple landlocked before it hits an ocean or a Gulf? The Great Lakes do not count.
And by triple landlocked, do you mean it has to...
Triple landlocked means from this state, there are three states before you get to water, or two states and a Canadian province. There's one state that fits this, and I'm not going to give the answer on this. This is for people to decide on their own. But that was an interesting question. Did not take us too long to come up with it, but you have to picture the map in your mind. And do that part if you're listening. Don't grab a map, because that doesn't make this any fun. Was there anyone, Jared, you got a couple. Was there anyone that you got the other day?
I liked the one about where you had to list the albums by units sold.
Yeah, units.
That was a good one.
Units sold.
It was
from highest to lowest.
Hotel California, Back in Black, 21 by Adele, and Shania Twain.
Yep, whatever her big one was.
Yeah.
Come on Over, I think is the name of it. Most Certified units sold. Whatever the hell that means, right?
And those are all albums.
They're albums. Correct.
I would be bad at. I'm not going to be nearly as confident.
We'll give up the answer on this one. The state one. The listener's going to figure out.
I would guess that the highest one there. I'm going to guess is Hotel California because I think that's the highest selling single of all time. So I'm going to guess that was number one.
Okay.
But I'd move AC/DC down. I'd maybe go Adele, Shania, then AC/DC.
So you're along the same lines of thinking that we were. So you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, but he's right about number one.
Yeah.
Hotel California is number one. Number two, which was the shocker, is AC/DC, Back
really?
In Black.
Yeah.
Wow,
that
okay.
has sold a ton of albums.
Been out there a long time, first of all. I mean, and it's had a lot. Think of how many times AC/DC has that kind of like resurgence in popularity.
Well, anytime a movie comes out, right?
Yeah.
With their songs in it, they probably get some album
sales.
When
we were kids, Mark, they were 10 years, 15 years old. I mean, they were a mid-80s band, and when we were kids in the 90s, Thunderstruck was everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Every high school football team coming out
and
on
then
the field.
Early 2000s, Jack Black did School of Rock, which brought back a bunch of those songs that seemed to spike their popularity again.
Yep.
Seems like every time one of their members dies, they get a little bump.
It does help. It's kind of like when Glee came out, Don't Stop Believing had a huge like sales bump because that was the song that was featured. Number three, by the way, was Shania.
Yeah.
And then Adele.
All
right. We got about 8 minutes left, so we haven't talked sports on this for a while. I do want to, because Jared is Mr. Basketball, to give Jared a little bit of chance to talk about his hot takes for the upcoming NBA draft. Specifically, if we want to talk about Iowa State, we can focus on their guys. And here's your chance to play prognosticator. What is going to happen with the Iowa State guys?
First of all, I think Talen drops out of the first round.
Really? Why is that?
I don't think that people are sold on him as what we maybe thought that they were.
Have you heard that his current play has not been great?
No, I haven't heard anything specifically, but just from what I read, you know, where the people that I read a lot of, I know that they talk to a lot of people, and it seems like everybody is less convinced that he has a position maybe than what they thought he would
do. He's a tweener.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Well, and it's not even that he's a tweener because obviously that's not a thing really anymore with just the way that basketball is, but where he doesn't really do anything at an elite level. He's the only things about him that really right now I think are elite are his length, which is something that really he doesn't control.
That's kind of
just how it is.
How he's born.
And then, I mean, I think maybe his playmaking skills to an extent, but at the same time, he makes some ill-advised decisions, especially with his shooting choices.
Sure.
He does not shoot the ball at an overly consistent level. We know that for sure, and he's so streaky. I don't think that his shot is one that people are overly confident that they will be able to fix to the point that he will be a super consistent shooter down the road.
Yep.
And he's not a good defender. I mean, he makes some plays sometimes that are all right, but he isn't a very good defender, from play to play. It kind of takes where he'll make one really good play or he'll get a steal or he'll block a shot or something like that, but you just see flashes of things that he can do. Can someone figure out a way to harness that? And, you know, I still think Talen will get drafted. I think he will sign a two-way deal with someone, but I think that he will probably spend the majority of this season, and I would guess the majority of next season, in the G League.
I could see kind of a Deontay Burton type of – and that might even be best case scenario. I'm not saying he's that type of player. I'm just saying that type of career movement where he ends up in the G League, performs well in the G League, maybe even bounces around, gets a couple of what are those 10-day contracts.
The two ways,
right? And then if he's able to, if that athleticism is able to develop into real basketball talent,
right.
I think that's what you're saying here. I mean,
well,
the dude's a freak athlete, and he's 18 years old.
He doesn't even have that same explosiveness necessarily that Deontay did.
Right.
I mean, Deontay could do those things that when you saw him jump, it's like, dude, this guy like shakes the ground jumping.
I'm not trying to say he's athletic.
No.
I'm just saying that type of path that we saw Deontay go through that seems like it's a really tough one. When you're watching highlights of him throwing down dunks in the G League, and then 2 weeks later, he's sitting the bench for 10 days. It's like
minus the stop, averaging whatever it was, like 45 points per game in South Korea, like he was last year.
But he was bouncing again. He bouncing around the world trying to find a spot. That's what I can see happening with
Tampa. So the biggest unknown, I think, is because I think you believe this. Wigginton not getting drafted.
He will not get drafted. If he got drafted, I would be absolutely shocked.
Okay, so that leaves Shaq.
I think that he will. He has a chance to jump into the bottom half of the second round.
Okay.
I think that Mariel's good enough to play in the NBA. I think that he probably will play in the NBA at some point. But teams do not draft for pure skill sometimes. Yeah. I mean, they know that they can go and get a guy like Mariel Shaiak. Yeah.
Shaq seems very, very steady to me. He's not a big risk.
His phone will ring immediately after the draft is over if he does not get picked. Yeah. I'm pretty confident in that. And he will go – I think that he'll go to summer league and he'll play really well.
He's a guy on Monday we could hear about signing a undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or, even tomorrow. Like on, over the weekend, we'll find out that this is who he's going to go play with in the summer league. Summer league starts in 2 weeks, I think. And he could go out there and, similar to what Matt Thomas did 2 years ago, where he went and played with that Lakers team and then everybody got hurt and they still went and won the championship. And I think he scored like 30 something points in that championship game.
Mark, aren't you glad the summer league starts in 2 weeks? Seems like we haven't had basketball in
like days.
Since
it really is a year-round venture. Holy crap, dude! Much more than football is. All right, Jared. Put on your thinking cap here.
Okay.
Get out the crystal ball. I'm going to see if you can correctly, and this isn't too tough at the top, correctly pick the top five picks in order.
Whoa. Okay,
of what's going to happen.
Okay.
New Orleans at one. I think we can all agree.
Oh yeah, that's Zion 100%.
All right.
I think you can go
Nuggets
number
a little tougher. But
I think you could go number two pretty hit.
Yeah, John Morant's going number two.
Yep.
Okay.
That's why, I think that was officially guaranteed yesterday with them trading Mike Conley.
I think there's
a favorite for the Knicks.
Barrett at three.
Yeah.
And now is four and five are where it gets really tough. What do you think New Orleans even does with that? Do you think they hold on to that fourth pick and take somebody from that second tier? Or do they try – Hines thought they might even try to package some things and trade up into that top three.
See – I don't know that they'll try and trade it, man. Who are they going to move to?
Right. Neither one of those teams are – they're locked into those
Memphis dudes. Is, I think, dead set on they want John Morant, which makes sense because I think John Morant's
good
awesome.
Fit there.
The Knicks would be stupid to trade anything. And they would be stupid to move up one pick to get that.
You can't you're not going to bring in – Barrett's going to be a bigger draw and probably a better talent than anybody you're going to bring from New Orleans.
Yeah. And – If anything, I could see them taking the package that the Hawks were supposedly shopping for the fourth pick for 8 and 10, which makes sense because I think that
that'd be smart
for what the Pelicans need. They would get a guy that would really fit that could fit their what they need at 8 and 10, where you get a guy like DeAndre Hunter or somebody like that. At four, I think even if the Hawks trade up, I think that people are pretty confident that Darius Garland from Vanderbilt, I think they feel pretty good about him being the guy that will go number four. And I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody try and move up to get him because he is really good. And we forgot about him because he spent most of the season hurt.
Plays at Vanderbilt.
And also. He plays at Vanderbilt. But he only played in like five games. Yep. And then he got hurt and missed the rest of the season. And then number five, I think, will be Jarrett Culver.
Okay.
From Texas Tech.
Big 12.
Yep.
All right, so you're officially locked in. Those are your picks.
Those are my picks.
Top three is hard to argue with, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, four and five, I really think that it could go anyway. If New Orleans does stay at four, I wouldn't be surprised if they took DeAndre Hunter at four, honestly. I think just because right now what they need is shooting. They don't have any shooting whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't know – Brandon Ingram has had all those health problems that are that have kind of plagued him here for the last year and a half. So you don't know what you're going to get from him. Obviously, we know Lonzo can't shoot the ball for nothing.
Correct.
Drew can shoot a little bit, but and then Zion's a guy that I don't think you can expect to come in and be a big time shooter for you. But if they did trade back to 8 and 10, like I said, I think you could get a guy like Cam Reddish at 8, and then I think you could get a guy like Jackson Hayes from Texas to play center. And then if you get those two guys, man, you got a core that you can that you can rock with those guys.
Were you aware that LeVar Ball wanted his son in New Orleans the whole time. That was the plan.
According to LeVar Ball. I'm not surprised at all to hear LeVar Ball try to claim that. That wouldn't shock me a bit if he came out and with a straight face tried to say this was the plan all along, man.
You see Melo's going to New Zealand?
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll actually make the league at some point.
I think he will. He's a good player. He's a lot better than the middle kid. I mean, he. I wouldn't be shocked at all, actually, if he ended up being the best one. Really, at the end of the day.
LeAngelo?
LeAngelo.
Is that the middle one?
I don't know. Whatever happened to him. He's going to end up selling shoes or something.
He's just not
getting
them.
Or stealing them.
True.
See what I did?
You made a little China joke there.
Well, it wasn't a China joke.
It
took place. That makes it sound like I've said something culturally insensitive.
Just took place. I thought it was shades too.
It was sunglasses.
God,
it was like a $20 pair of sunglasses.
Facts, right, man. All right. Hey, I mentioned earlier rates. You know, can help you find a great house at a great rate. Ryan Grove up in Ames. Call Ryan Grove. I did not know this, by the way, but Ryan Grove. I did know he's a good shooter. I did not know that he teamed up with Young Jared here to win a three-person league or whatever you guys.
No, we won
there.
The Huxley City Championship.
Booyah! Ryan Grove was on that team.
You beat the other team.
There were six teams.
Six teams.
To be exact. Actually, hey, there might have been eight.
Ross,
we had to play three games.
The point
the
is they're champions, all right? So Ryan Grove is a champion. He can help you buy or sell up in Ames. And do it now because rates are absolutely fantastic. Chris is hopefully going to be here next week. We have no idea who else will be here as we're down a co-host. We'll figure that out. Ross, thanks for coming in. Jared,
I love
thanks
doing
for recording.
It. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm off to a closing. We'll see you next week.